Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
CNBC's Big January continues with the JPM Healthcare Conference, the Amex Golf Tournament, Inauguration Day, and the World Economic Forum in Davos. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Layla Rahimi.
This is where we have a big open, and then it's like, music!
Anthony Harris.
I was saying this to some guys earlier before the show, and I'm glad-handing and you know, kissing hands, shaking babies.
Live on 670 The Score and on the Odyssey app.
Are we old for knowing exactly how Let's Get It Started plays?
We're old adjacent, at least. I think that's fair.
Yes. Tyler Farengel, we're older than him.
Oh, well.
Hi, Tyler. We are live at Rally House. Ann Heron, Layla Rahimi, and you, we are surrounded by really cool stuff.
Lots of it.
Yes. When they name all the teams, there's a reason they actually do have an excellent selection of sports apparel, paraphernalia. Ray showed me that Rally House is living in 3008 for another Black Eyed Peas reference.
Okay.
There are Cubs flip-flops with bottle openers in the bottom of the shoes.
Let's go.
MacGyver is finally realized today. Look at that.
All right. Now we're talking.
I didn't even know... See, this is why I would be a terrible inventor.
I got two brother-in-laws who would be all about that right now if they saw that.
I know we're going to talk about the Pop-Tart Bowl today at some point. I feel like that's necessary.
It's taking over the world.
It's really disturbing for me. It's
nightmare
really
fuel.
Asks a lot of existential questions
of
yourself.
Nightmare fuel.
I love the marketing, like, brilliant, but I loved Pop-Tarts growing up. So, like, but I... You know how I feel about
I'm
this,
I'm guessing
right?
That's exactly what Tyler Farengel had for breakfast, actually. I feel like he's still in that age demo that we eat Pop-Tarts for breakfast.
Do you have Pop-Tarts today?
Not even going to lie, I haven't had Pop-Tarts in over a year.
Okay, responsible adult.
Over a whole year.
It is not
he's far too old now for Pop-Tarts.
I like plain strawberry.
Okay.
Which is not iced.
Like the old school.
Plain.
Old school Pop-Tart.
They had sprinkles on the sidelines.
Back before
too.
They had dozens of flavors that they
yeah,
were
I'm not here for that.
Promoting.
It takes away from the filling. Mm. I don't need the icing to overpower the filling in a Pop-Tart. Everything else, yes. If I could have an all-icing cake, yes. But
I love how deep you've thought through the Pop-Tart's do's and don'ts.
It's really just about me taking sugar consumption very seriously.
Right. That's fair. That's not a bad thing.
So Ann and I are here at Rally House Wrigleyville from 9 a.m. to noon. It's across the street from Wrigley Field. They are really getting it together for the Winter Classic.
We're hanging out at Rally House.
Yep, Rally House. Uh-huh. We'll be broadcasting live from Rally House where you can enter to win a $25 gift card. And also, yes, you can actually enter to win a $25 gift card. Chris Chelios is going to be here doing a meeting from 1 to 2:30. And that's all today is they're getting ready. And everything is fun. I actually had dinner at Big Star with a friend last week.
Ooh.
So, like, the festive vibe is happening here, even though it's a little bit rainy outside. Would you rather have the rain or the snow?
So, I mean, with the Winter Classic being upon us in the time to come here, the snow would be better for what's happening, you know, like right here just across from Rally House coming up. But between the two, I think I might have mentioned this to you the other day when I was on with you and Grody, just the fact that the surface I liked playing on least was a slick surface, like when it was raining. That just bothered me most from a footing perspective.
And here, playing in the snow. A hockey player.
No, not in the least. Ice skating, I've tried it a couple of times. I didn't fall and hurt myself, but still uneasy. Very, very wobbly on ice skates. But as far as just getting real footing, being able to plant and drive and things like that, being in the rain was a big issue for me. I didn't love so much. I do feel like, though, you're talking about just the surroundings here at Rally House. My gaze is locked in on the big and tall shop. That big and tall section right there, that is where I'm going to be at some point during the day, just kind of checking out what they got, what fits me. I see even further away the kids shop over there, too. So we got options for all shapes, sizes, ages at Rally House. There's a lot to look forward to. We're going to be here for a few hours, so I think I may peruse a bit.
Oh, you have to. Yeah, they really do have a good selection. And they even have White Sox stuff. So I know that might surprise you up here, but it is the case. If only they had a "you need a smaller headset" shop.
Just start to put several skull caps. Just put more like skull caps, winter hats. Just put several of those on your head, and then add the headset to it.
That's not a bad idea. Didn't Marshall put his headphones over his hoodie the other day?
Is that what he was doing?
Yes.
I remember seeing a clip, and I had no idea what was going on. That is one thing that's underappreciated about us balds, which
balds.
Yeah, the balds don't always like to claim me because I kind of fake the funk. I shave my head just because I don't like dealing with
hair. The faking of the shaving of the head, I think, drew a couple looks from Lawrence and
drew
from
some
Marshall.
Drew some scorn, but it's far more low maintenance than having to try to edge something up, line something up, deal with product or anything else you might be doing in your head. But with that being said, there's no insulation here. So when it starts to get chilly out, I don't have any. Hats don't, as I was telling you before the show, hats don't fit my head. I have the opposite problem for you. My head is enormous.
I have a tiny
head. So I can't just go out and just say I'm buying a hat off the rack here, just make it work. So I have to be very specific with my hat purchases and make sure it's going to be something that's comfortable, something where I'm not going to stretch the hat out. So I'm guessing Rally House, I don't see. Oh, I do. Okay, we got a big giant wall of hats here. Maybe they'd have an 8.25 back here somewhere.
8.25? Who are you, Bruce Bochy?
8.25. Yeah, we're not messing around.
Bruce Bochy would always brag about that.
Really?
How big his hat size was. Let's look it up.
I got to take Bruce that on. I got to take Bochy, the Bruce Bochy approach and just
hat
brag about
size.
The enormity of my hat size.
Meanwhile, I'm like a 7 or 8. 8 and oh, an 8th. You're bigger than Bruce Bochy.
Okay. There's no way
yes.
you're a 7. There's no way you're a 7. I'm sitting right next to you. That's not a 7. That's sub 7.
Something.
Yeah, that's a sub 7 skull. I know him when I see him.
People get pretty critical. They're like, "Oh, Lily, your head's too big." Like, I'm not here for you. I'm here to have something on my head to protect me from the sun, because you know how it is.
Yeah.
We pigment easily. People forget that.
Uh-huh.
At the end of the summer, I look like a road map. I want the hat to protect my head from the sun. I tuck my hair up underneath. We live. I'm not here for you to judge my hat size, random person.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Now that we've gotten that out of the way.
At Rally House.
Bruce Bochy's hat size. I did not think that was on the bingo card in the show today, but it is just sports-wise something you need
to
know.
It's early. Who knows what else is coming?
You were cooking up a thesis during the Bears game that I think is valid, because Dan has been very cooking up a thesis antithetical to yours.
Okay.
Dan has been like writing the story of the season, and it all turned at the Hail Marys. If this is a movie and that was an act, and then you either pull the curtain for the intermission to begin the next act of the season or movie in this case, or play. But to me, I also disagree with that, because if you believe in coach speak, the game being not won or lost on a single play. It should not have come down to the Hail Mary, and that should not have derailed your entire year.
Yeah, and I don't believe it did. And this is something, and I'll admit this, in the moments following that game against the Commanders, where the Hail Mary takes place and Tyreek Stevenson is the you know, the original way that before Muhammad Ali was talking about the GOAT, the original way folks were talking about a GOAT was the person who was the heel, the person who was the, you know, the failure in the game. Like, oh, you were the GOAT from that moment. That was before we kind of, you know, put a more positive sort of turn and conjecture.
You're
on
right. GOAT did have a negative connotation.
I mean, like, newspaper headlines from back in the day had a very negative connotation. That was the GOAT from this game. So before that moment happened and Tyreek Stevenson became a national, you know, punching bag, and everyone around the country was talking about him in that moment, looking at the crowd and then going and knocking the ball to the opposing team to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. Before any of that happened, the Bears were already awful on the road. And frankly, that was a game that the Bears would have been extremely fortunate to win because they got roundly outplayed throughout that particular game by the Commanders. But they had one of those, and it was still early, so we didn't realize it was going to become a frequent thing, a furious fourth quarter comeback to find a way somehow to take the lead in that game. A few spectacular plays from Caleb Williams. Defense comes up with a stop or two, and then there they are. They actually take the lead late somehow. We're trying to figure out, wait, how are they actually going to win this game? Because they've been awful today after being awful in Houston and awful in Indianapolis, and this was just the latest awful road game the Bears had played, and they were somehow going to come out with a victory, and then they don't. Immediate reaction afterwards, well, frankly, they didn't deserve to win that game anyway. Now, hand up, I actually thought the team was going to respond well because of how poorly they played and because of what the expectations were. The idea that, you know what, this locker room, the expectations that have been here with the team, I didn't realize how bad the quote-unquote culture was at that point. So I'm thinking they're going to respond to this because while it was a disappointing way to lose, but the overall film of the game, they played bad. So I actually thought the team was going to respond from that. I felt like that was a result of a game that they would have an easier time responding to than if it was this game where they actually played really well and had the disappointment of doing their best and then coming up short. Those, to me, are the moments that are more difficult to respond from. But so being wrong about that, about the response of the team, hand up about that. But the season as a whole, there have been no signs that the Bears have been good on the road at any point this year.
That's it for me.
And to point to that singular moment, to point to that Fail Mary is when the season turned, I just don't think it's accurate. It doesn't take the full body of work of the Bears. It didn't take all the data points into account for what they had been before that and, frankly, what they've been since that, because there have been a bunch of games where they've continued to fight back in the fourth quarter and have opportunities to win and then come up short again and again. And Kirk Herbstreit was even talking about it during the Thursday night game that, well, they were 4-2, and then that play against the Commanders happened and it turned their season. I've never seen a season turn on one play like this. It didn't turn on one play. This is a team that was teetering on the brink already before that moment, and then, since then, has now fallen over a cliff and gone off the edge since that time. But this was not some team that was they had had a couple of dominant performances leading into the bye. So it felt like things were headed in a positive direction. But that game, there was very little positive about that game until the waning moments, and then it got negative again really quickly. And ever since then, they've pretty much been the same team they were before that plays awful on the road and then finds a way to fight back in late. There's plenty of evidence that that was not some singular play where the Bears became a drastically different team after.
Well, additionally to me, how many games are decided by one score in the NFL?
Yeah.
Many.
Right.
Many.
Right.
And so, as much as the Bears have struggled in that, and it has been an obvious struggle, I think you also have to take into account the fact that that's part of what makes you a good team in the league and part of what doesn't. We've talked about how Kansas City messed around and got first place in the AFC, already clinched. They already were able to do that, and they're averaging less than 30 points a game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not common, but the point is a good team is going to still win those games.
Right.
And additionally, I think that the reason you can't pinpoint it on this one game is how they played in the other games when you consider those final scores. It did come down to a missed kick against Green Bay, a block kick. It did come down to overtime against the Vikings. It did come down to a timeout against Detroit. It's also the fallacy of the last place schedule in the NFL, loaded at the front of your schedule, and then having to play nothing but divisional games beginning on November 17th out. And that's why the last Bears win on American soil was against Carolina on Sunday, October 6th. Is that, that's the part that hurts the most.
Been a minute.
But what even hurts more than that is the fact that not even this losing streak is going to ensure the Bears a higher pick than ninth overall because the bad teams in the NFL are that bad.
They're not even losing good enough for it to be beneficial, not to any large extent. I mean, if they were a significantly better team, they could still be right around that top 10-ish kind of range in the draft. And they've been a significantly bad team. And they're still right around that top 10-ish range in the NFL draft here. So it doesn't even benefit them to be this bad because they actually started off halfway decent.
Every time, every single time I look at the schedule results, I'm like 6-3. Nah. My brain's like, that's not a score, Lily. You're not looking at a football score.
At least not in professional American football, right?
I have to keep telling myself that that's indeed, the Bears score, not the White Sox and Mariners.
Yeah, I feel like a score we'd see across the street over here.
Yes, like, right, potentially that even fits. A hockey score.
Yeah.
That can happen.
Fits other sports where you get 1 point every time you score a goal. 1 point every time you score a run. Not for something you get 6-7 points when you actually do something right. When you actually end a drive in the way that you intend for that drive from the beginning. No, that's a 6-3 is not a score you expect to see in professional American football.
I'm telling you, I was hosting that post-game show, and I'm so used to hosting baseball post-game.
Okay.
That I saw 6-3. I kept seeing 6-3, and I'm like, welcome in to White Sox post-game. Mm-hmm. It just, your brain doesn't compute it.
Yeah. I think I'm open to being wrong about just my vantage point on this whole Fail Mary thing, but it doesn't feel to me like it's such a moment. It was such a moment in time that everyone in the sports universe paid attention to and gravitated towards and reacted to, and understandably so. And all the scoring that Tyreek Stevenson got from that, he deserved because it was one of the more boneheaded moments, and it did have a key sort of factor in the team losing that game. So I get that aspect of it, of why it's this shiny object that everyone gravitated towards from there. But the idea that somehow the Bears season was great and then that happened and then the season turned awful, it just oversimplifies, and frankly, it lets the team off the hook. That to me is the biggest concern from that, because to say all you had to do was erase the Tyreek Stevenson boneheaded moment and the season would have gone so much better, it alleviates a lot of the pressure that should be on Ryan Poles for the way the offensive line looks. Frankly, the way the defensive line looks, the way this team is constructed, and the leadership within that locker room. Should Matt Eberflus still be the coach? If not for that Tyreek Stevenson moment, there were a lot of issues with Matt Eberflus and his management of this team prior to Tyreek Stevenson. There's a lot we can point to about, well, maybe he didn't discipline him enough, or he didn't discipline him quickly enough, or he didn't tell everybody what the discipline was going to be, and then it dragged out. Yeah, there's a lot to pay attention to for that, and to accuse Matt Eberflus of how he mismanaged that. But there was so much else that he mismanaged it at a high level before and after the Tyreek Stevenson fail Mary, that I don't want to let Matt Eberflus off the hook and just say, well, that was the moment that turned the season for the Bears. Matt Eberflus is going to lead a division champ if not for Tyreek Stevenson. We shouldn't let the team off the hook by just paring it down to this one moment, because there's a lot that has to be fixed with the Bears if they're going to go on some sort of a run here that everyone hopes they'll go on, that they seem to be pursuing right now. And they got a lot wrong aside from just the fail Mary.
The Arizona Cardinals rushed for 213 yards the next week.
Yes.
We remember how bad that first half of that game felt, where they're up 21-9 and didn't feel like they had a prayer the next week against a Cardinals team that at the time seemed beatable.
Yeah.
And instead, that was a whooping.
And so, the Patriots game was even worse after that, right?
That's and if the Hail Mary hadn't happened, we'd be talking about the blocked field goals.
Yep, plural.
We would be talking about the inability to change once the NFL found out Intel about the trajectory of Cairo Santos's kick.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we would be talking about. We'd be talking about the
lack of a run game, right? I mean, you're one of the most consistent voices talking about the lack of a Bears run game.
Look how many rushing yards they had in this game against Arizona, 69.
I mean,
fun number, not for this.
We shouldn't just say that the Fail Mary that the season turned on that moment and things were great before that, because then it allows the storyline to just be about that, as opposed to all these other focal points, all these other touch points, these other draft picks that don't seem to be developing at the rate that the successful franchises in football are able to develop. Like, you're not going to hit on every single draft pick, but if you go day two, you got multiple, thank you, sir, you got multiple defensive tackles, and neither one of those guys looks like they're in the process of turning into a high-level player. We were having the Karan Amagaji conversation after the Minnesota game where he doesn't dress the following week. That's a third-round pick. He starts one game in the most difficult environment he's ever faced as a football player, and you're the ones who placed him in that situation. And then and yes, there's some explainable reasons for why, because of the lineup and he doesn't play the interior and you need a backup center, all those things.
Well, but he doesn't made Larry dress. Borum not available.
Yeah. So he doesn't dress the following week. But then after that, frankly, I think that the game that followed against Detroit, I from a pure production perspective, thought that Zach Pickens had one of his more impactful games as far as like being around the ball carry, getting near the quarterback, having a few stats associated with it. And I'm not here to tell, because I've certainly reminded folks that Zach Pickens has not been productive. But then coming off a game where he actually showed some life, showed some production, then he doesn't dress the following week against Seattle.
Makes
so I don't know
no
what the
sense.
Explanation is for that. But in the least, you can say that you have young linemen on this team. Resources have gone into Karan Amagaji, a third-round pick. Day two picks, what, second and third round for Javon Dexter and Zach Pickens. Javon Dexter had a few sacks early in the season. He hasn't been some shop-wrecking three technique. So the guys who you've drafted recently to hopefully be the future of your line of scrimmage, Darnell Wright seems to be the lone individual that actually is developing into a quality football player. That, to me, is a much bigger issue than Tyrique Stevenson having this boneheaded, immature moment.
Do you know why? Because Darnell Wright's tape matches what he does on the field. His tape at Tennessee matched what he was going to be expected of doing on the Bears. You know who isn't that way? Zach Pickens.
True.
You know who wasn't that way? Javon Dexter.
True. Yeah.
And if this is what you expect out of your fifth round pick in Braxton Jones to be a capable left tackle in the NFL, what on earth are you expecting out of your third round pick on the offensive line in Karan Amagaji?
Yeah.
And I hate that we have to talk about these people in a critical way, because we shouldn't. But on a bad team where you need everybody to come through more than they have been, this is what happens.
Yeah. And you have kind of both ends of that spectrum with young talent that needs to be developed at a better rate, at a stronger rate than they've been developed so far. And then you also have the top financial end of the roster, where there's easy questions, reasonable questions about Tremaine Edmonds, because you spent money there. You know, so is Tremaine Edmonds worth the money that he's being paid right now? Jalen Johnson's role within this team. We'll be able to talk about JJ throughout the show a little bit here. And just not only the expenditure, because he's an exceptional football player, but then are you getting the return on investment from the success of the team for that investment that you've made there? So you kind of have both ends of this. Montez Sweat, the lack of production that's been there for him as a pass rusher, the stats you're hoping for. You know, you pay him like that, you're expecting, regardless of anything he's getting from a blocking scheme perspective, he's supposed to be a double-digit sack guy. Now, frankly, he's never been consistently that throughout his career anyway. So the guy we've seen this season is much closer to the Montez Sweat we've seen throughout his career.
Yep.
A big guy, an athletic guy, a well-above-average defensive end. But frankly, not the guy we saw last year. The guy we saw last year here in Chicago is the outlier. So there's questions on each end of that spectrum. Are you developing the youth of the roster and the money that's been spent so far? Cole Kmet, you know, those guys who've gotten paid, where you're wondering whether or not that investment, right now the evidence is the investment is not paying off for the Bears.
And that was my concern from the very beginning with some of these contracts. The guaranteed money on Cole Kmet told him and the rest of us that you expected a lot out of him.
Yeah.
And I think he's doing his part, but there have been drops. He hasn't been targeted. Is that a fault of the structure of the offense? Is that a fault of the quarterback? We can talk about that in a different light. But the point is, there are multiple failures with this team that go far outside the reach of a Hail Mary. Don't let the national people talking to you tell you that it just came down to one play. You know. You know in your heart that is not the case. I also want to say that we are broadcasting live through the Hyundai Studios, because we are live at Rally House here in Wrigleyville, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And a big thanks to the people who are here with us today. Mark Hayes, our engineer. Ray Diaz decided to work on a Sunday with us.
Look at Ray.
And Tony and Eric, our promotions guys, are hustling too. So say hello to us. Get out of this rain. Come enjoy a little bit something different. Anthony here and Layla Rahimi joining you until noon here at Rally House.
Comes down to one last play. And it's going to be getting longer by the second. You're all the way back at the 30-yard line. Now you can step into it. Here comes the Hail Mary with the game on the line. And the ball is caught! Caught! It's a miracle! It's Noah Brown! Oh, my goodness! This town is going crazy! It's a madhouse in Landover, Maryland!
He did it!
Oh, this one will be paid back over and over again for decades. Ball tipped by Stevenson. Noah Brown just standing back there all alone. Plucks it out of the air for the victory.
Meanwhile, one member of the team had to hustle to get back to defend on that play. But no, that was not the turning point of the Bears season. It's a 17-game season. There were many warning signs. There was a speed option on fourth and goal that was maybe one of the worst play calls of all time.
Yes,
there were many signs. Mm-hmm. There were red flags. You just didn't choose to believe them. Not you, Ann Heron. You knew better.
Oh, I mean, yeah, I'd say to a certain extent, I could be a part of that crowd leading into the Tyreek Stevenson moment, the end of the game against the Commanders. I was at least a believer in the direction the Bears were going through that 4-2 start, leading into the bye week, the performance in London, back-to-back dominant games. Because when you dominate the NFL, like to your point earlier, so many games come down to a single score anyway. Even teams that are struggling badly versus teams who are having a lot of success. In the NFL, they tend to be one-score games late, even if the margin – you know, carries a little bit wider with a late score or something like that. You tend to have games that the score stays pretty close more often than not. And then you have that, you know, horrible, terrible, no good, very bad play against the Commanders.
I everybody, see what you did there.
Yeah, that everybody can grab hold to and you know, and have sort of a fulcrum, a linchpin, if you will, for that. That being, if we're going to say that is the pinnacle of the way the Bears season has gone, then I think, okay, if we're going to say that's peak Bearsness for 2024, I think that's fair. But it's just, it's not the only moment. It's not the moment where the season turned. It just, to pare it down to just that moment makes it sound like the Bears were doing great before that and there were no signs of struggle. And then things just turned on a dime. That's just not the case. And it was the way Kirk Herbstreit presented it the other night during Thursday Night Football. It was the way some others, especially nationally, have presented the way this season has gone here. Because I was very hopeful through that 4-2 start for a team that was growing. There's enough youth in this lineup. There's enough youth on this roster. I'm looking at the team and just feeling like there should be development. Because I will at least credit the way this regime has discussed things, the word development was never really uttered by Ryan Pace. You know, it was almost like this assumption that it was going to happen, and you saw so many players that weren't developed. So at least Ryan Poles, Matt Eberflus, they both came in talking development, but then the actual implementation of that development has lacked, like we were talking about a decent bit in the first segment here. And that particular play before that game against the Commanders, I was hopeful about this Bears team because it's a team that was beginning to dominate and none of these guys have won at a high level. So I'm thinking, you know what? If they're dominating and they're recognizing their potential, what they're capable of, then this should continue to head in a positive direction. But it wasn't overwhelmingly impressive before that, especially on the road. Their home road splits through the first couple of months of the season were drastic. It was like a college football team, how well they were playing at home and how horribly they were playing on the road. And the Commanders game was just the latest. It was not the first example of them playing really poorly on the road, and it's continued throughout the rest of the course of the season.
There were signs.
Yeah.
And that's what we are trying to say. And I hate that we have to push back against such a respected analyst when it comes to a presentation like Kirk Herbstreit.
Sure.
But the man is in a lot of places. And I'm not his boss. But we are here to tell you that it wasn't just the Hail Mary that led to this. You can point to that as a good example. If you're putting together the Bears highlight reel or low light reel or tell the best story of 2023-24, that type of deal, then yes. Yes.
The ball is kicked.
Yeah, if you're doing a one failing moment instead of one shining moment, you're running for your life. You're taunting the crowd.
Caleb running for his life.
One failing moment.
Right. Yeah, it would have a very different vibe to it. I feel like Speaks is going to do something with that.
And then you just see cutaways of guys rolling their eyes, and you know, it's the exact opposite.
Speaks, you can have it. Go for it, Speaks. I can't wait to hear Speaks' one failing moment.
I would happily edit the montage to that song, and I guarantee you I would find everything. Like the Nats play of No. Matt Eberflus just froze. One failing moment. Oh my gosh, this writes itself. That's really scary.
Oh, that's got to happen.
You're running for your life.
Now. Right.
And you just show constant plays of Caleb Williams.
What's that, Daddy? It's a falling star. Caleb has no pass protection.
And then he's on the bench.
Yeah.
Oh, this is the worst ending to a season montage I can think of. So, yeah, that's in the montage, the fail Mary. Uh-huh. Sure. But unfortunately, like, speed option is in the montage.
Yes, it is.
You know, there's a lot of different plays that are in the montage.
Yeah, just the look on Eberflus' face at the end of multiple games, especially his final game as Bears head coach on Thanksgiving against the Detroit Lions. A lot of those moments exist. I mean, you know, passes being thrown over the heads of defensive backs, quarterbacks from opposing teams, just patting the ball in the pocket because no one's near them on the Bears defense. All those things have taken place. So the way this season has gone. Yes, the Tyrique Stevenson, immature, boneheaded, no good, very bad play at the end of the Commanders game could be at the pinnacle of it. But it doesn't seem to me to be the play that turned the Bears' season. From a record perspective, being 4-2 going into that game, a chance to get to 5-2, that is accurate as a statement. But so many signs existed before then that the Bears were going to be this bad. Now, I was tweeting about this a little bit during the game on the 26th against the Seahawks.
I liked your tweet. I think I replied to it or reposted it or something because I thought it was a valid comment.
And some of the pushback I got was, well, in the least, this is it was a game, it was a play, it was a moment that broke the locker room. I would even push back against that.
Yep.
Because my impression of the Bears locker room, and my impression of the Bears locker room certainly turned after that game, because that was the week where after that Commanders game, we heard so many of the players coming out and becoming more vocal about the coaching staff. That surprised me. Now, maybe that's my fault. I don't know. Maybe I didn't realize that the locker room was kind of broken.
Though.
But my impression was that this was a team that was together. They had been building something. They'd been taking these lumps over the last couple of years. And that can, as a unit, callous you to go through some of these hard times, because you've been through hard times already. You've lost so many games together in recent years, and now this is a real opportunity that this team has had to build towards something, and supposedly this was going to be the year that it happened. So it just shows the lack of faith that they had at that moment in the coaching staff. But I frankly was surprised in that. I thought the locker room was together enough where they would respond to that incredibly negative moment and to one of their individual players, one of their teammates, being this national laughingstock, and all kind of come out of that together looking to forge this path towards positivity in the season. And it really, like, a couple of days later, I'm like, man, these guys are chirping a lot. I was caught off guard by it. I was surprised by it. And so midweek, I'm like, oh, maybe they're not going to recover from this. I thought immediately after the game, they're going to recover from this Commanders thing. Like, that moment didn't worry me that much, frankly. And then a few days later, I'm like, man, these guys are chirping a lot about the coaching and the decision-making. All right, maybe this locker room isn't together like I thought it was.
Is it that, or is it that, to me, that's not coming out after one failed game?
Mm-hmm. It's been
no
building.
Reasonable player, no reasonable employee, no reasonable anything is going to say, let's air this out after one game. Typically, that behavior happens when you're sick of something happening.
Uh-huh. Right.
You know that. You know it better than I do, having been a former player.
No, but you're right on that.
And I don't – you guys know better than me, and you've said it, Olin has said it, that it is an indication of the locker room's cohesion. Mm. But to me, it's more the indication of cries for help. Mm. That's how I felt.
Mm-hmm.
Not that they were crying literally for help.
I hear what you're saying.
I don't want to take away the power that these guys
right,
have.
But letting it be known that things are not as they should be here, that the leadership in place, the decision makers in place, this things aren't functioning like they should be from you know those types of cries for help. I know what you mean.
I think you can tell when people feel like they haven't been listened to.
Mm.
And I think people felt like they hadn't been listened to, which meant that this was going on for a while. It was a simmer that then escalated into a low boil, which escalated into a rolling boil, which escalated into the pot boiling over.
Yeah.
And that's what we've seen. I think the fact that they've been in it so many other times, even trying to get down the field in that Seahawks game, shows you that they don't want this to be the thing that defines them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's fair to say. We've asked many times. They don't want to pinpoint it on one play.
Yeah.
Who does?
Right. And it shouldn't. And they're in the other 6 days of the week that they're there working and watching film and getting treatment, all those other things, you know, they're having the opportunity to sort of build what should be this Cal together, to build towards game day and the success they're hoping to have together. And so I think because they know everything that goes into it, you're rarely gonna see a team, a player, a locker room point towards just one moment. Say, well, yeah, that's what did it, because there's been so much preparation leading into that game.
People are now giving us on the text line
suggestions
for plays for the one failing moment montage. I hate to say it, but I really want to edit this right now. Like, we're doing this segment, and I'm thinking about the clips that I would put in. I'm like, okay, I don't have Adobe Premiere at home. I do have Final Cut Pro. I'm like, I can get this together relatively quickly if I were rolling, recording on all the games. And then I'm like trying to, like, the mental process has already taken off.
Right. I mean, we didn't even mention.
Call up the kids at Fox 32. I know Joe Today could do that in a minute and a half.
I'm guessing they could put something together. I mean, the Doug Kramer fumble. I mean, if that wasn't the moment of moments this season, that's
Joe
one of the
Today would
things.
Rock that montage.
It's almost eerie how many plays or moments from this year feel like, wow, an NFL team did that. That happened during a National Football League game that they turned around in a critical moment and handed the ball to a backup center, or at least tried to hand the ball to a backup center.
Hand the ball to a backup center.
Yeah, right.
He didn't go high. Oh, my gosh. This is
the arrogance of Matt Nagy.
I hate this is all coming together so perfectly. You know what I like to say a lot of times when the best story you have, I sit with it for a minute and then I start writing. I'm like, writes itself. Like, the story writes itself. It didn't even need me.
Feels that way.
Yeah. The one failing moment montage, unfortunately, is definitely the case. Anthony Herron and me, Layla Rahimi, are broadcasting live from Rally House in Wrigleyville. We're here until noon. You can enter to win a $25 gift card. And you want to, because there's so many cool things here. There's a lava lamp over here. Did you see that?
I didn't see the lava lamp.
Not a Cubs lava lamp.
Okay.
And it's a speaker? I'm not prepared for all the multitasking items at Rally House. Flip-flops with bottle openers, speaker lava lamps. I'm overwhelmed.
Yeah. They have a section for both big and
tall
people. I mean, come on. How much better does it get than that?
Hi, do you have a tiny head section? Thank you. So Ant and I are here. It is all happening today from Rally House in Wrigleyville. And yes, we are talking Bears. We're going to talk a little college football. Jim Miller is going to join us. I'm looking forward to that. That's happening at 11. Mark Grody is also going to at least join us on the phone. Dave the Cat apparently busted in on the podcast recording. He's at 10. Right, and Dave, you are with us here on The Score.
Well, it's all about finding a way to try to get another week, and did enough to get the victory. It wasn't easy. That's a good football team that we played that didn't quit until the end of the game, so I have a lot of respect for them. But we're going to enjoy this one, and we've earned ourselves another one.
I love this song. Leave the door open. Marcus Freeman, Notre Dame head coach, maybe the game of the quarterfinals on the 31st, Notre Dame taking on Boise State. I told you we were going to talk college football with Anthony Herron on The Score. So we're doing it. And I want to get your opinion about the quarterfinals in the college football playoff.
Okay.
I was looking at two games in particular as being more competitive than what we saw in the first round, and that would be the game on, what is that, Tuesday? Today's the 29th? I have no concept of time right now.
Oh, my days are all jacked up right now.
The time?
I couldn't tell you if today was Tuesday, if it's rally day. I don't know
what day
today is. We'll go with Schmooze Day.
It's Schmooze Day, the 32nd of December. So
I'm guessing it ends in Y, but other than that, I couldn't tell you.
It's the 29th. New Year's Eve is on the 31st. I remember a time where all of the college football games happened on New Year's Eve, don't you?
You're old enough to remember that?
I am old enough to remember. I like this format better where you use the actual New Year's Day bowl games as the quarterfinals, except for the Fiesta Bowl, as we mentioned, 31st. So what do you think of the breakdown of the college football playoffs so far? I am looking forward to that Texas and Arizona State game because that's the 5-4 seed, but I think that Notre Dame game, Boise State game, is going to be as competitive as any this next coming round.
Well, they have, the running back Ashton Jeanty has been a player who's Boise State facing Penn State there. The Boise State running back Ashton Jeanty, he finished second in the Heisman, and to be able to do that from a group of five team, from a non-power conference team, just shows how impressive a season he put together. Penn State defense is legit, and that one's certainly going to be a line of scrimmage game. Like you referenced with Notre Dame and what they're going to do in facing Georgia. They're the 7th seed. Georgia's number 2 seed. Georgia will not have Carson Beck, their starting quarterback. He, jacks his elbow up. So their backup is going to be in the game. A backup who was a high-level recruit and, has had a little bit of run this year, hasn't played that much. But Carson Beck was a guy who was thought of to be potentially in that number 1 overall pick conversation coming into the season. He's turned the ball over far too frequently this year. So he's had some moments where you see his peak and his talents as a passer and his mobility. He's also had some moments where, that have probably been far too frequent of turning the football over and wondering about that. So he's declared for the draft. So, they're gonna have the backup quarterback in the game against the Irish. And Notre Dame defense, they didn't afraid to blitz. And Notre Dame defense is exceptional on the line of scrimmage. And Marcus Freeman, after getting that bag, and as Lawrence tends to joke, using the Chicago leverage to make that happen. But, for him, as a guy who potentially, had some NFL offers that might have awaited him, but committing to the Irish committing to him. A lot of fans in this region, my wife and her family included, that are excited about Marcus Freeman staying with Notre Dame. And the expectation, the anticipation would be, because we know what Georgia's been in college football in recent seasons, that there'd be some huge personnel advantage for the Bulldogs. I'd say there's a personnel edge for Georgia, but I would say it's more slight. Riley Leonard is Notre Dame's quarterback. If they can, if Georgia's defense can put him in a scenario where he's got to throw in more predictable situations, then they're going to be in trouble. Indiana went into that quarterfinal matchup with the number 1 run defense in the country. Notre Dame gassed him for that 98-yarder early and had enough efficiency to their run game throughout where Indiana just wasn't able to put Riley Leonard in any predictable scenarios. But, he's been an ineffective and inconsistent passer throughout much of the season for Notre Dame. He's gotten better, but that will be kind of the crux of the game. Georgia's backup being in the game, does he make enough plays against that Irish defense? And as much as anything, Notre Dame's offense. Can Georgia's defense put Notre Dame's offense in a situation where Riley Leonard will have to throw on downs where it's known he's going to throw? When he's had to do that this season, that's when he struggled most.
Yeah, I understand that Notre Dame is good. I appreciate that the Northern Illinois loss was their worst loss of the season.
Right, yeah.
We'd be talking about them in a much different light if it wasn't for that, obviously.
Mm.
But to me, I think I misspoke because I mentioned Marcus Freeman earlier. Penn State-Boise State was what I was shooting for. That Fiesta Bowl, I think, is going to be competitive. Ohio State and Oregon.
The Rose Bowl.
So here's the thing to me is that I know that it was a 1-point game in the regular season at Oregon.
Yeah.
But, man, Ohio State's loss, I was thinking about this yesterday. Yes, it was Michigan. Mm-hmm. Yes, it was bad. Mm-hmm. Yes, it has people calling for Ryan Day, and I understand because you can't lose to your rival that many times the way they have.
Right, 4 years in a row now, yeah.
But the thing is, one of the things I've always heard coaches talk about when it comes to an SEC schedule, or when the Big 12 was very good and had perhaps two at least top five teams, 4 or 5 in the top 10, is that at some point in that schedule, it is unrealistic to think that you're going to go undefeated. Yeah. Like, people don't realize the toll it takes playing that high competition week after week after week after week. And that's why you see some of the SEC schools, I think, schedule that FCS team in November.
In November,
to
right.
give their team a break for that reason. Uh-huh. And the Big Ten is adjusting to this. Mm. Take that Ohio State-Oregon game, for example. 1-point loss to Oregon at home. I don't credit that as much as it's a loss on the scoreboard. There's no doubt about that. But I don't consider that a real loss for Ohio State like the Michigan game. But this stuff is going to happen now that the conferences are so deep and talented. You have to take that loss with a little bit of a grain of salt, knowing that's not who this team is in its entirety.
And can it be used as fuel afterwards? And with those 3 weeks in between games where Ohio State's regular season ends with the most crushing of the four now consecutive defeats that they've suffered to Michigan, you could certainly make the case, and it's an accurate one, that the last three Michigan teams that Ryan Day and the Buckeyes lost to were great teams, were elite teams. One of them is still the reigning national champion until further notice in the weeks to come as this college football playoff plays out. So losing to those Michigan teams, then I look at that and say, you know what? Michigan stepped their game up, and Ohio State just lost to one of the best teams in America. That's forgivable. Now, this last loss, only way that the losing to this season's Michigan team, this mediocre Michigan team that squeaks into a bowl game that has no passing attack, a passing attack much worse than the passing attack Notre Dame's put out there this season. A passing attack probably even worse than Iowa's passing attack, which for me as a Hawkeye, I'm willing to admit, the passing attack seemingly has been outlawed in Iowa City.
That is a big indictment.
Yeah, but they even threw the ball better than Michigan this season, somehow, some way. So to lose to that Michigan team and for the game plan to be just so lopsidedly boneheaded to say we're just going to run between the tackles. Where's Michigan's strength this season? They've got two of the top defensive tackles in the country. Where are we going to defeat Michigan? We're going to run right at the top two defensive tackles in the country. Made zero sense with all the weapons Ohio State has on the outside. But
yeah, that part.
But they seemingly used it as fuel, and they played ticked off. Excuse me, with the spittle. They played ticked off against Tennessee in the quarterfinals. And yes, and they were able to, over and over again, defeat Tennessee over the top. Their defense played with passion and aggression and anger. That's the Ohio State squad we anticipated seeing coming into the season with one of, if not the deepest rosters in the country. So if we see that Ohio State, any team in the country is going to struggle to beat them. Oregon is a roster that is nearly on par. I would say roster edge slightly to Ohio State. But Oregon's got a lot of depth and talent as well. So that Rose Bowl is one of these games where you look at it taking place in the second round and whatever is considered the quarterfinals now, I guess. You look at it taking place in this window and say, oh, man, there's going to be two more rounds of games after this. This could and probably should be the national championship matchup because it feels like the two best teams in America, you know, Georgia's quarterback's banged up and they've been playing uneven. The rosters are great. The coaching, you know, certainly has high-level talent there. But it's not going to be. It's going to take place in the Rose Bowl on New Year's Day. So we're going to enjoy it. But that matchup, I do believe the winner of that game is the team that will go on to win the national title.
I for some reason, think Georgia is a much better team than Notre Dame. Mm. I feel bad saying that, given where we are. Prove me wrong. I'll be happy about it. But even this version of the Bulldogs, they showed you who they were the entire regular season.
They've been, and Georgia gets judged by a different standard now because we've seen their elite level play out so often, so frequently. They haven't been the same Georgia that we've seen in recent years. It hasn't been the same degree of
dominance. The margin for excellence is not as much. Like the delta, the difference between what them and their opponents hasn't been as big,
right.
But it's still been.
They're an impressive squad. They're no doubt. They're no doubt an impressive squad. And Georgia fans have gotten so upset. And part of it is just fans get spoiled with consistent and sustained excellence. But then the thought has been, like, Gunnar Stockton, he should be in the lineup instead of Carson Beck anyway. And, you know, Carson Beck, he's still going to be a first-round pick. He's an exceptional, talented quarterback. He's been turnover-prone this year. But Georgia fans have gotten really upset with him to the point where, like, you know what? We might be better off with Gunnar Stockton in there. They're not better off with Gunnar Stockton in there. But – he is a talented and a highly recruited prospect. He's going to be in also.
Sounds like a familiar request I've heard here.
Yes.
Yeah, except the difference is one person will get some outright playing time regardless. At least that's happening at the college level. So those are the games we have to look forward to. I was very happy to talk college football with you, Ant, because we don't get to very often.
Yeah.
More with Anthony Heron as we are live from Rally House. Come hang out. You can enter to win a $25 gift card. It will go far here because they have all these cool things. Hang with us. We have more Bears talk. Mark Grody is next on The Score.